Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Paul Lawrence, a partner at PricewaterhouseCoopers, and today's conversation is with Ida Castro, Chairwoman, U.S. Equal Employment Opportunity Commission. The types of jobs in the future and the skills and the abilities of the workers and even the changes in the work patterns will require adjustments in how we address employment discrimination in the workplace. What are some of the examples of these challenges, and how are we going to think about them?
Well, there are a number of challenges that actually we don't have to look too far into the future to understand that we're already facing them, and we may be a bit unclear on how ultimately we will deal with them. History will tell. But for example, in the area of discrimination, as we increasingly use the internet as a mechanism to find, apply, and acquire employment, it'll become extremely difficult then to prove, for example, provide sufficient evidence that any particular individual might have been discriminated because of sex, gender, race, national origin, age, or what have you. Does this mean that it doesn't occur? No. But necessarily, the issue of evidentiary thresholds begin to take a greater importance. How does one prove glass ceilings or plexiglass ceilings or glass walls or sticky gooey floors, whichever analogy you want to use? The issue of evidence, the issue of how does anyone actually know why was it that you were deprived of this employment opportunity, really becomes a question in a practical sense. But there are other, you know, issues that come about that present a series of challenges, certainly for the agency and ultimately for anyone involved in the area of human resources or in the area of employment litigation. And that is the reality that we have such a large workforce, which is almost kind of split in half. And half of our workforce is already in the workplace of the so-called future, while the other half is in your more traditional workplace setting, the fixed hours, fixed place, and so forth and so on. And the conditions under which each group works is varying increasingly. And in one sector, meaning the one that's supposedly in the future but really is in the present, varies constantly and so rapidly even amongst itself. So there are a number of learning curves in terms of those of us that are not necessarily a part of that workforce, understanding what are the changes and understanding what are the realities. From our perspective, for example, I'll tell you, in the information technology field, a lot of anecdotal references to wage discrimination, to glass ceilings, to lack of hiring of minorities and women after certain levels, and so forth and so on. Difficult to prove why, because the level of fear of retaliation in that industry is so enormous that it's beginning to dwarf the level of fear that generally you see in the lower wage industries that employ, for example, undocumented workers, that employ the most vulnerable in our workforce, even though in IT you have higher paying individuals and so forth and so on. The stress that's caused by discrimination, the stress that's caused by the uncertainty of the work environment, the stress that's caused by the fear of retaliation, however, has the same effect on the workforce, on its productivity, and on its loyalty, of course, to the employer, and should be concerns to any employer in that industry. If you want to recruit the best talent, if you want to retain the best talent, and if you want that best talent to give you all that it has to give, then you have to provide a work environment that really tells this talent that they should want to work for you. And that works across the board, industry to industry. and it works geographically. It doesn't matter where you are located. It's just simply good business to provide those kinds of work practices. How do we get involved with this new area, new industry that is constantly changing, where people pop up almost as teenagers and become instant business owners and multi-billionaires with little or no training about how to manage a workforce, et cetera, et cetera? How do we do that? We need to do that by focusing on this reality, understanding it, and working together. And certainly as chairwoman, I will do all that I can while I'm still in this position to reach out to the employer community and reach out to everyone so that I can understand what are the challenges that all these industries faced and begin to work with the employer community as well as the employees to develop policies that make sense and to develop policies that get us where we want to go, which is in a discrimination-free environment.
What advice would you give a young person contemplating a career in your field?
Oh, I would certainly encourage young and old to look at this area and certainly come forward and work within the area, whether it's from a business perspective, a labor perspective, but perhaps even more importantly, from a public service perspective, certainly at the federal level, and I'm sure that at state levels, this experience is replicated in a variety of commissions and like agencies. It's always important to not only contribute to your community and society, but also to have the exposure of understanding what are the competing industries, how is it that discrimination actually plays out at the workplace, how do you identify it, and perhaps how is it that you can have an impact, a real impact in making people's lives better for all, because this is not a matter of preferring one group over the other. It's really a matter of creating a workforce in America that will keep us number one in the economy globally.
One of the toughest challenges that public sector managers face today is recruiting and retaining employees. Does the EEOC have this problem, and how do you deal with it?
Oh, absolutely we have this problem, because the minute we train our folks and we get good investigators and good lawyers, the private sector comes running and takes them away from us. We deal with that problem by making sure that we have a sound fiscal program that creates the level of credibility that will then command the support of the executive and of Congress so that we can continue to have the funds that we need to provide training, to provide the opportunities for growth within the agency that will permit us to retain good staff. Now, let me quickly say, though, that we also have an advantage, and that is that many staff members come to us because of their profound commitment to our mission. And we've been very lucky over the years in that regard, that even though we've not been able to reward them as they deserve, they've stuck it through with us because they really believe in that which we do. And certainly, I think that that is a plus for our agency. So I would suggest to any listener that is interested in serving his or her country, like the U.S., that wants to get a job in this area, that this is actually a good time. We receive some additional resources. We're hiring folks. So look us up. The experience will be unforgettable.
Do you want to mention a website?
The website, absolutely. Another pride and joy of mine, and that is EEOC.gov. Very easy to reach and very user-friendly.
Well, great. And I'm afraid we're out of time. Ida, I want to thank you for being with us today. I've enjoyed our conversation very much.
Paul, I'm really appreciative that you asked me to come, and at whatever time that we can continue to discuss these important issues, I'm willing to do so. I really appreciate the opportunity.
Thank you very much. This has been the Business of Government Hour, featuring our conversation with Ida Castro, chairwoman of the U.S. Equal Employment Opportunity Commission. To learn more about our programs and research into new approaches to improving government effectiveness, visit us on the web at endowment.pwcglobal.com. See you next week.